Did I ever tell you the one about the two guys that go to the psychiatrist?
No.
So these two depressed guys, and they're not doing good.
They go to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist says, I usually don't see two people together, but what's going on? And they say, we're sad. We have nothing to live for. You know, we want to die. And the psychiatrist says, well, you're just in luck. There's a new podcast out that would really make you happy. It's called Pop Culture Man Children.
I like what you went there. Okay.
And the two guys say, but doctor, we are Pop Culture Man Children. PCMC. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
This is Emilio Sparks.
That is Beast Boy, Mike Buongiorno.
You like my Beast Boy? You like that? I got that for like $5 at Toys R Us.
Yeah, no, I can see. So we're not coming from the house of ill repute today, my bedroom. We're coming from Mike's basement of cool.
Yeah, we're surrounded by my plastic.
It's just growing now. Like, the plastic is growing. Mr. Poopy Pants, I see.
Yeah.
I like
I've got a cup collection now as well. I got all the Deadpool cups from 7-Eleven.
Mm.
And you can't see it because they're in a bucket, but I got all the Denny's Han Solo cups.
Okay.
They
okay.
have Millennium Falcon lids.
Okay.
Also, those giant bins are full of toys and books.
Okay.
And collectibles of various kinds. Of course, the plushie chair has grown.
Yeah, yeah. The plushie chair, I used to be able to sit on that, but now...
No, that's where the plushies go.
That's no more.
I got a Fawlier there next to E.T.
Yeah.
The extraterrestrial. I got Baby Groot.
Which is a vintage E.T.
You bet he is. That's E.T. from the 90s wearing his
E.T.
hoodie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Back when hoodies were cool.
That's what we do. All right, so for more information on who we are, what we do, go to the Instagram... At Pop Culture Man Children.
There's not that much information there.
No, but I
Google
mean, this
us.
Stuff on
For
there.
For more information of who we are and,
what we do
and what we do,
would be the Instagram because it highlights Mike Buongiorno's toy collection.
Well, this is Amelia Sparks' social security number. 09253. That's how you really find shit out.
What, social security numbers?
Yeah.
I just recently
really
learned
info,
mine.
What are you like? You're like 45 years old. How did you go through life without it?
You're also looking at a guy that at 32 just got his first credit card, like a big boy.
Good for you.
And he still
What's
hasn't
your limit?
Used it.
What's your limit?
It's non-existent. It's like maybe $20. I don't use it.
I have 4 credit cards at right now.
I could tell that you're spending because of all this plastic.
I'm 9 G's in debt.
I know you are.
I won't go past that because 10 sounds worse.
Yes.
10,000. Oh, my God. But 9's whatever.
9's cute.
Yeah, yeah.
10 means you're in debt.
What kind of credit card did you get?
Capital One. It was the only bank that would give me one. Yeah.
Did the Vikings actually come over and
give
it to
you? Yes, they did. They shook my hand. They stroked my beard. They were like, welcome.
We have a guest in the basement today. Anthony Buongiorno. You're my brother.
Hello.
Are you a professor as well?
I'm a teacher, high school teacher.
Now, do you constantly say, hey, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a professor?
No, but I'd say, I don't know if you know this, my brother is a professor.
Of course you do. See, you Buongiorno stick together.
That's what I say.
So now, are you as addicted to the plastic as Michael is?
No, I actually was going to bring that up, if I may turn the tables right off the bat. Yeah. I don't own any toys, and I consider myself to be a pop culture addict. But I don't think I would consider myself to be a man-child. So my question to you boys would be, do you consider yourself man-children because of the toy aspect? Or is it like the cape stuff? Or, you know what I mean?
Amelia, take it.
Oh, where do we begin?
My brother Anthony owns a house.
He's a
you
grown-up.
Just got your first credit card.
Yeah, so I think that answers the question, Ant.
No, I think, I don't know if it's necessarily, to give you a serious answer, it's not the toys as much as it's the emphasis. It's,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
The fact that I can spend so much time thinking about this bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
You
gotta understand,
what I mean?
I spend hours thinking of this show and thinking about professional wrestling to cover on my other program. So my week is just this.
Yeah. But you know, you have 2 podcasts, one of which is good. So,
yeah.
So, one of which is successful.
Okay, so in one aspect, you're a connoisseur of pop culture. Like, you ingest it.
Yes.
You eat it all up.
Yes.
But you're not doing what me and Michael would do, which would be collecting things.
I was just going to say, I'm not a collector. Well, I collect books, I guess. I don't have any toys, stamps, cards.
Anthony had a puzzle phase.
I like jigsaw puzzles.
What's the last puzzle you did?
I'm actually working on it right now. It's an Art Deco tableau.
What do you do when you are done with them? Do you like put them back?
I immediately disassemble them and put them back in the box.
So you're not the guy who puts the glue on it?
No. Everybody says that I should do that, but I, again, it's like I don't like to have too much stuff.
You have a whole extra room.
Maybe I should get it framed.
Yeah,
or something.
But you're also forgetting one thing, though. Like, you know, he also has a significant other, so the significant other might not want the bullshit around the house, where you and I are just these wild and crazy bachelors who have no one. Yeah. So we have to fill our lives with inanimate plastic to fill a void, because I got gaps and you got gaps, and together the toys fill the gaps.
This is not the week to be putting in sly references. I think you should get into collecting things. I mean, what are you going to... You can't take the money with you.
I don't know what I would collect. I mean, I like I said, I collect books. I used to buy DVDs and Blu-rays, but that's just... Nobody does
streams
that.
Streams now.
I don't know. I'm not really into toys.
What about coins?
Coins?
You got to give them something.
You could go further with the books. There's like vintage bookstores, and that's what I would do.
Yeah, but then the searching of a first edition...
Doesn't have to be first.
Kind of gets costly.
No, our friend Nadia collects trashy sci-fi paperbacks from the 70s. And, you know, you could get those for like $3.
Yeah.
And they're just funky looking covers and stuff.
Collect clocks. There you go. Get a clock hobby.
My mom collects clocks.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Say collect clocks. It's hard to do.
Collect clocks.
All right, well, you made it look easy. All right, let's go to the news. So, Gotti.
Can we just laugh?
The dream pet project of John Travolta. Well, first of all, it got a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's good to see.
One pro reviewer actually said, even though he was a mass murderer, he deserved a better movie. But now the real crazy thing is that it's got a positive user rating, around 70. It's like the opposite of what happened with The Last Jedi. Well, the critics like it, and all the neckbeards are like, no. So the studio that released Gotti, they put out a TV spot. And the TV spot says, the movie that the critics put a hit on is America's favorite movie. We've talked a lot in the show about how much fucking there's toxic fandom and how, like, the shit that goes on Rotten Tomatoes is crazy. But this is the first time I've seen a major film, let's call it a major film, and a major studio use the difference between the user rating and the critic rating as part of their campaign.
Because you could do that with a film like that and then put the emphasis on the hit.
Right.
Like, here's a movie that critics don't want you to see.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you said two words that are really important, and those two words are John Travolta. So I don't want to downplay the Scientology aspect, because those reviews may be coming from his cult.
I'm glad you said that, Anthony, because in fact, some people, the Scientology thing I've not heard. That's a new hypothesis. There are people thinking about it being a formalized campaign, just like what happened with the Star Wars. Because if you go online and you look at these ratings, there's a lot of ratings that are word for word from other ratings. And then there's a lot of ratings where you click them and they just joined yesterday and the only movie they reviewed is Gotti. So there is some shenanigans going on.
Now you have MoviePass.
Yeah.
Will you be going to see Gotti?
I almost saw Gotti today. And then I almost saw Adrift. And then I ended up doing neither of those. Will I see it? Yeah. You want to see it with me?
I would see Gotti with you. But what we have to do first is watch the Amon Asante vehicle of Gotti.
Wait, I did not know there was a Gotti picture before this.
There was, I think it was like an HBO movie or something. It starred Amon Asante as Gotti. And it also had Zorba the Greek in it as well.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a real interesting film.
This movie was supposed to be straight to
it was canon?
DVD. It was, no.
It was Gotti canon?
Yeah.
Does this start a whole Gotti verse?
Oh, the Gotti cinematic universe?
Yeah. Do we get a Gotti cinematic universe?
There's a scene in Gotti where Travolta goes into a bar and he has a conversation with Russell Crowe as the Wolfman. And it sets up for the next one that hopefully happens.
What if we get a Gotti-Gili crossover? I think that's, and you could, we could establish a whole new universe similar to the MCU. What do you think?
It could be the Martin Brestiverse.
There you go.
All, so we'll do Geely and then Beverly Hills Cop 1. So the Martin Brestiverse.
But why do they also do this? So let's somehow shoehorn in the two Be Cool movies as well, where John Travolta plays Chili Palmer.
I never saw, no, I'm sorry, I saw
Get Shorty.
Get Shorty. I did not see Be Cool. There's also Get Shorty show on with Romano.
You're slacking.
Which I have not, I have not watched. Well, you know, to be
listen,
a pop culture.
Listen, Travolta had one good movie.
Well, all right, wait.
Well, two.
What's his good movie? What's his good movie?
Saturday Night Fever and Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah, Pulp Fiction.
I did not like Grease.
You don't like Grease?
No. I'm not a big musical guy.
What about Michael?
No.
He plays a fallen angel in a trench coat.
I'm good. I'm good.
Travolta's been trying to do this Gotti thing for a while.
But what I want to know is why Gotti?
I don't know why. I don't know why.
Like, I understand that, like, mafia culture and John Gotti transcended to, like, a pop culture realm. But
yeah, I mean, he was the Teflon Don.
Yeah, he was untouchable.
He was somebody that you knew.
Yeah.
But I don't think of Travolta as, like, I don't know. I don't know anything about Travolta, but I wouldn't imagine him like
as a gangster.
Super, like, yeah, super into it.
Can't see him as a gangster. This is the same guy that starred in Battlefield Earth.
Oh, speaking of Battlefield Earth, if I have time for a story, me and my brother Anthony went to BookCon, and at BookCon there was a booth of L. Ron Hubbard books, and there was a very nice lady who saw me. I was looking through them because I was like, "Let me take a look." And she was like, "Have you read Battlefield Earth?" Because I had a Philip K. Dick T-shirt.
Of course you did.
Do androids dream of electric sheep? And she goes, oh, you like pulp sci-fi, right? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And she's like, well, have you read Battlefield Earth? That's a classic. And I'm like, hmm. And then she's like, yeah, if you do it now, I'll give you a T-shirt. And she was so nice, I almost signed up. I almost was a Scientologist.
And you were like, no, sweetheart,
yeah,
I don't
we almost,
in organized
I immediately
religion.
Walked away because I just thought, well, I've lost them.
Yeah, I was super close.
But you're
to,
a man that doesn't believe in organized religion.
I kind of wish I had bought Battlefield Earth.
Why? To then go back and read Dianetics?
No. When I was in high school, I read, like, not Dianetics, but like a kid version.
Are you telling
it.
Us something here?
I dabbled in Scientology, but I also, as much as I dabbled in Buddhism and Islam, when I got rid of Christianity, I was like, let me try something else. And then I was like, nah, nothing's good.
Is the celestial being inside of you speaking to your Thetans right now?
My Thetans?
Yeah.
You're being a total SP right now.
Yeah, I am.
Suppressive personality.
Yeah. Get a real dick about this made up fucking L. Ron Hubbard Gene Roddenberry fucking religion.
Speaking of forces living inside people, George Lucas, in an interview with James Cameron for his new TV show / book about the story of science fiction, talked about what he wanted episodes 7, 8, and 9 to be about.
What would they would have been?
Okay, so as you know, episode 1 to 7 is the Skywalker family. And they use the Force. And the Force comes from these things in your blood called midichlorians, which no one likes. They only talked about midichlorians once, and the fans are like, let's not do that.
I didn't even know that.
So his idea was much like the film Osmosis Jones, where instead of being about the Skywalkers, it was going to be inside the body of a person, and it was going to be about these characters or these beings he called the Wills, and they are the actual Force inside your blood.
I'm so glad this movie never came to be.
And I mean this seriously. This is not just a bad idea. This is mentally unwell. That's you're crazy now.
Now, that would have been a really good animated thing.
No, it would not have been.
You don't think so?
You
would have bought some fucking weird Will's toy.
There's a 9-episode series. The first 6 are about 2 generations of a family. And then the last 3 zooms inside one of their bodies, and there's just 3 about cells.
So would it be like you see Luke, and then immediately the camera just nosedives into his ear for the rest of the film?
I believe that's what he was going for.
So
he even says in the interview, this motherfucker, he even says in the interview, the fans would have hated it. And it's like, why are you proud of that? Why are you proud of that, you fat fuck?
Maybe he wants to kill off the thing that he started.
He does. If you hate The Last Jedi, this should be vindication that you're a fucking idiot. Because is that what you want? Is that what you want? You want a midichlorian movie?
You would have definitely have bought some sort of midichlorian paraphernalia. I guarantee you we would have saw fake bags of plasma hanging in this room, and I would have looked at you like, what are you doing?
You act as though I have no discerning taste.
No,
I'm not someone who likes everything. I could go into something I like.
I'm not saying that you don't. have an opinion on something and you will hate Star Wars, but I know the type of guy you are. Once you breathe that Star Wars air, once you get the taste, you're in.
Well, I would probably buy the toys because they're released ahead of the film, but if I didn't like the film, I would then get rid of the toys.
I don't see you flipping.
I don't see you flipping anything. You weren't a fan of Rogue One,
but you've bought several Jyn Erso pieces.
I like Rogue One. It's the worst of the new ones.
Anthony, that was the first Star Wars film I ever seen.
Rogue One is not a bad movie, question mark, but it's definitely not. I don't think it has any rewatchability. I saw it once, and I feel like I'm good for life.
I did enjoy Solo, a Han Solo
story. I have not seen Solo yet. A Solo.
Where are the toys on that?
Emilio only sees the anthology films. Yeah. He's like, fuck the Skywalker saga.
I'm good. They're right there. I don't need to see the blood pathogens.
They're right there. Here's car that he steals in the beginning. There's Kira and Han and the dog things that are chasing them.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is a Lego
That's
piece.
From the beginning. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's actually one of my favorite Lego cars. It's stout.
It does have a little weight to it.
Yeah.
I will say, I like this. This is what maybe you should get into, Anthony. Maybe you should do Legos.
Yeah, I've told you before, if you like puzzles, you might like Legos.
I know you've said, and I quote, once I start clicking them bricks, I lose all track of time. So I know that there's a therapeutic value in it for you. Maybe I used to enjoy Legos when I was a child, you know. Because children like toys.
Speaking of bloodstreams, Anthony, you read Dr. Sleep.
I really, really enjoy Dr. Sleep a lot. I'm a big, gigantic Shining fan. That includes the book, the 1980 Kubrick film, and the 97 Steven Weber TV movie. So I was happy to see that Ewan McGregor is going to play the adult Dan Torrance in Dr. Sleep. But my concern as a fan or question is, how are they going to posture the sequel? So is it going to be like, are they going to attempt to make it a sequel to the Kubrick? Are they going to attempt to make it a sequel to the 97 TV movie, which I don't think they would do? Or is it going to be a standalone? And if it is a standalone, it's got to be very flashback heavy because there is no real Shining movie that exists that's true to the book.
You're the expert here. Let me ask you. I've not read The Shining. I've only watched the Kubrick movie. And I know that they're different. For years we've talked, you hear about like how Stephen King hates the movie. But how are the endings different to such an extent that you couldn't just have this new movie and just in your head it's the sequel to the Kubrick one?
Okay, so at the end of the book, the Overlook Hotel explodes. Not to spoil Dr. Sleep, but in Dr. Sleep, they go to the site of what was once the Overlook Hotel. And at the end of the Kubrick movie, you very much get the feeling that the hotel is going to continue, doing what it's doing. And then Halloran is killed in the Kubrick movie and then is like a pretty important character in Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that then. Unless you just make Dr. Sleep as itself and then do make flashbacks to connect you to things.
I feel like that's probably what they will do, and that might be the best way to go about it. And that might give them the opportunity to cast an interesting actor to be Jack in flashbacks. Although you're going to have those people who are going to be like, oh, well, he's not Jack Nicholson, so not my Shining.
But what about Ewan McGregor? You happy with that choice?
I am. I think he'll do a good job.
He has the force in him.
He's riddled with Metaclorian. It's going to be interesting, though, because the adult Dan Torrance is a pretty dark character. He's a real fuck up. He's very much like Jack. He doesn't have, his life together. He's not a happy kind of guy. And he has this ability to, he knows when somebody's about to die with the help of his cat. He has a, it sounds worse than it is.
Oh, this movie just sounds like a crock of shit.
I liked it a lot, but it's tonally different. There's a group of people who are like the main antagonists called the True Knot, and they are like vampires who feed on the Shining. So they like kill children with the Shining and then like absorb their souls like Hocus Pocus style. It's very new age Stephen King, if that makes sense.
It made a lot of money. So now we're back on the King train, baby. We're back on the King train.
Everything's got to be a sequel in a Stephen King universe now.
There's a whole Stephen King show coming out that's like The Infinity War of Stephen King. It's called Castle Rock. And it's not based on any particular book. It's just, imagine all of his characters live in a world together.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. You walk into the bar, you see it.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's shit like that's going to happen.
See, all right. Now, if they make it like a satire.
No. It's going to be very serious, sir. It's produced by J.J. Abrams.
I don't like it.
Let's go to the trailer corner. The fourth version of A Star is Born is coming out next year. I actually looked this up yesterday. The first version was in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the actress who played her. But then the 40s version was the great Judy Garland. And then the version in the 70s was Barbra Streisand. And now this new one is Lady Gaga.
Yes,
Gaga. Looking, you can't even recognize her. She's not made up at all. She looks like a human person.
I love the Gaga.
I thought it was interesting that in the trailer, it seems that they established this thing that she is supposed to be unattractive. Did you pick up on that?
Bradley Cooper is the guy in this. He also directed this movie, so this is probably a passion project for him.
It's his Gotti.
Yeah, and he's like, why don't you ever sing anything you write? And she's like, people have been telling me my whole life, I like the way you sound, but not the way you look. It'd be funny if he were like, right, so...
Okay.
What about Chappelle? Chappelle in there acting like an actor.
You're forgetting one.
Who?
Dice.
Where was he?
I'm in the movie.
Where? I don't remember.
Oh, because after I saw the trailer, I had to look it up.
Is he in the trailer?
Oh God! Let me tell you something. You know who's in this thing, bro? Chappelle, Gaga, Sam Elliott.
Okay, Sam Elliott. I saw
Sam Elliott. I'm telling you, Dice is in this thing.
But he wasn't in the trailer. I thought I was going crazy for a second. Where was Dice in the trailer?
Andrew Dice Clay.
You could do it, babe.
He plays Allie's father, Lorenzo.
So he's the one who goes, you know what, hon? Your voice is good, but your face is shit.
Her father says that.
Her dad.
Yeah. Hey, sweetheart, let me tell you something.
With his wonky eye.
What's with
his eye now?
Probably he's old.
But not everyone old loses.
You know what he's going to do? He's going to probably in the movie probably like bring the cigarette over his head like this.
Yeah. It's going to be the Pop It On Preach video all over again. It's just going to be, instead of Danny Aiello and Madonna, it's him and Gaga. And that's the whole opening 20 minutes.
Oh, and he's going to shame her the entire time. Look, honey, you look like dog shit.
Oh! the editor's like, I can't cut out any more O's. It's not in the script. He just keeps saying O.
Because you got to understand something. I do the improv. So I'm sitting here and I'm doing this old woman who lived in the shoes. She had so many kids. Cut. Her uterus fell out.
Cut. Andrew, we're good. Can you bring it down a little bit?
So you want the day the comedy died, Andrew. Dice Clay.
Yeah, bring it. You're way big right now. You're way big. Bring it down.
So wait, do you want... Showtime TV show Dice? Or do you want Blue Jasmine Dice?
Is Danny Aiello available? Can we just get Danny Aiello?
No. I'm asking you, what type of dice do you need?
He goes the wrong way.
You can't forget Dice's star turn in Pretty in Pink as Dice the bouncer.
He was the bouncer.
Hey, Ducky, let me tell you something about this, bro. That's essentially the same role. Maybe he's the same character.
And he was a bouncer at the Comedy Store. So he kind of was playing himself. I've not seen that movie in a long time. Was Ducky going into a comedy club?
No, they
were going into a nightclub.
Yeah, but but Ducky like hung out with Dice because Dice would never let him in because he knew that his ID was fake. He was a key character in that film. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like the Greek Chorus.
There's a new Halloween movie. This one cleverly titled...
Halloween. Just let it die.
So it's been 20 years since H2O. We're not counting 2 through the rest of them. Even 2 didn't happen.
But H2O didn't either then.
No, H2O counted 2 because in H2O she's his sister,
yeah.
Which we find out in part 2. But in this new trailer, some kid is talking to her granddaughter or whatever. And they're like, oh, isn't she Michael Myers' sister? And she's like, no, that's a myth.
My whole thing is like, Jamie Lee Curtis is back, and I feel like we're supposed to, as the audience, have this moment where we're like, oh my god, the OG is back, it's Jamie Lee Curtis. But this is her fifth fucking Halloween movie.
Yeah.
Like, she keeps coming back to this well, and I just think, like, in 20 years, will she be 80 years old? And they'll be like, okay, now this is a retcon where we're only counting 1, 2, 3, Season of the Witch, and 6. And, I mean, What do you think about that?
First of all, I guess Michael's not her brother anymore, so we could say whatever age he is. But if she's this age, Michael Myers should be like 80.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, H2O, to my memory, was the movie that pioneered the whole let's forget all the other sequels bullshit. And now they're doing it again. So unless there's a scene where someone's like, hey, I heard your grandmother and her son ran a boarding school with LL Cool J. And they're like, and she's like, nah, that's a myth. That didn't happen. Then maybe that's how they'll fit it into the whole thing. But it's weird. Also, this whole like Terminator 2, Sarah Connor, I go down into a dungeon under my kitchen and train for the day Michael comes back. What the fuck is that? Especially if the other movies don't exist. If the other movies don't exist, he's not that prolific. He's just a guy who killed 3 people in one night. I mean, not to sound like that's not a big deal, but it's not. He wouldn't be legendary.
Guys, I don't know if you know this, but there was another piece of that trailer that if you watch afterwards, Michael reveals who he is. And he takes off the mask, and you hear, oh, you should have cast me in a fish called Wanda, you bitch.
It's a great callback.
I can't. Where would he be in a fish called Wanda? That's a great movie. That's a great movie, first of all. I like that he's talking to the character Laurie Strode as Dice. Oh.
He could have played Otto West.
There's definitely a post-credit scene where we see Laurie Strode on the toilet eating yogurt.
Because
she's just like...
But what's interesting, too, is that it's not only you're forgetting all the sequels, but I read an interview with the screenwriters, one of whom is... what's his face? From Eastbound and Down.
Comedian Danny McBride.
Yeah, where they say that you also are supposed to ignore the end of Halloween 1.
Yeah, because in the trailer they say he was arrested but he after wasn't. His therapist shot him. But in the original, you look down and right. There's no one on the ground.
Right, and then it just... Halloween 2 picks up exactly where that left off. So it's very strange to just ignore 2.
I also... Look, I used to love Halloween as a kid. I even wrote Halloween fan fiction. As an adult, it's a classic, but I don't have as much reverence. The reverence for it, I think, is a little bit overplayed.
Let's talk about the Dumbo trailer, because that's the one that got me the most. And I don't like Tim Burton, but...
No one does. Right,
correct. Why does this look really good? Well, and I'm not a Disney guy. I've never seen the animation to... Mm-hmm. Whatever this is called now, human films of Disney?
Live action.
Like, yeah, live action. Yeah. I have never seen those.
Right.
You never saw the animated Dumbo?
No, that's...
I've seen 5 Disney films my entire life.
So, you don't know from Dumbo?
I watch clips on YouTube.
So, what about... All right, so then...
So, Elephants on Parade needs to happen in the Tim Burton vehicle.
But I want to know what about this trailer, like, hooked you.
Oh, I want to actually see the...
Flying?
I want to see him fly.
With his big...
And I want to see the...
It's a sequel, not a remake?
It's a sequel. It begins after... That's why people were joking around that he seems so depressed in it, because his mother dies... Spoiler alert. His mother dies at the end of the cartoon, and his mother's dead in this.
What's with sequels just having the same title as the original? It's very confusing. Halloween and Dumbo, I'm looking at you.
So we won't get... I've never seen an elephant fly sang to us? At the end. And
I'm sure it'll.
The magic feather. Didn't he do Alice Through the Looking Glass as well?
He did two Alice. I saw the first one and it was pretty bad. I guess it's kind of like the Hook thing, but at least Hook was called, it wasn't called Peter Pan. It was called Hook. So this should be called, you know, Dumbo's Depressing Life.
Well, I didn't know all that. I looked at it as, oh shit, they're just redoing Dumbo in the live action, and the handsome Colin Farrell is the ringmaster. And,
you've got all the Tim Burton regulars back. You got Batman and the Penguins.
I was all in until I saw From the Imagination of Tim Burton, and then I immediately checked out.
I groaned, and then I actually watched the thing, and I thought, oh, this elephant is adorable, and look at its little CGI ears, and... Oh, look, he revealed himself in the hay, and he has a little frown on his face. This is...
If it weren't a Tim Burton movie, I would give it a shot. I just don't like Tim Burton. He's had some good movies, but for the most part, it's all just weird, melancholy children's movies. You want to take a break?
I would love that.
All right, let's take a break.
Hickory dickory dock. A mouse goes up to the thing and he gets... Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet. She's eating the thing and then she gets... I was in bed with this broad. She turns to me. She goes... Hey, lady, are you with those guys? What are you doing them one after the... Jack and Jill go up the hill. Jack turns to Jill. He goes, why don't you just let them... I get through doing this broad. She turns to me. She says, hey, what is...
Your socks annoy me.
Why? Because one's inside out, one's not?
No, not even that. No.
I don't match my socks.
Why don't you...
My last day of class, I always tell my students, like, here's things for you to know in life. And one thing I always tell them is, it doesn't matter if your socks match.
It really does.
No.
It's about uniformality sometimes.
It does not, guys. And I mean that both literally and figuratively.
No.
Can I show... Wait.
Your socks are atrocious. And I saw the picture on the Instagram.
No.
At Pop Culture Man Children. You can follow us on Instagram. You can follow me on Twitter, at Emilio Sparks. And Mike has the most disgusting socks in the world. And I'm going to buy you a pair of black ankle socks.
I have black
ankle socks. From
Polo.
Well, then start wearing them.
I don't have it on my phone anymore. I had a great email that a former student wrote me where she was like, thank you so much. You changed my life. And I think about the thing you said about socks every day.
I'm sure she did.
I did not.
You made that up. No student wrote that.
I change lives. Do you guys get that?
As a professor.
All right, we're back. Pop Culture Man Children. This is PCMC. Emilio Sparks is over here. I'm Mike
Pedro. I have
better
socks than you. I do. Listen, there's just some things you need, okay?
Don't forget to subscribe.
I'm getting you a pair of Polo socks.
I just actually bought a whole new bag of socks. These just happen to not be them.
Why don't you burn those?
Because they're super comfortable.
But they're ugly.
You can find us on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Apple Music.
Hey, listen, why don't you write in the comment section, hey, Mike, get new socks. Don't listen to this hippie bullshit that life and socks need to run parallel to each other.
Don't match your socks. Einstein wore the same outfit every day because he didn't want to waste any of his brain power on sartorial matters.
Mike, you open up the drawer. You pull out a pair of socks.
This is the least chill
you put
sesh.
Put the pair of socks on. Now let me tell you something. I have not worn...
I'm attacked. I'm under attack.
I'm just saying, I have not worn any other colored sock but black since the summer of 96.
That's weird too.
It is very weird.
But that's 20 years ago.
I like consistency. But your socks...
Well, I'm not weird with my underwear.
Yeah.
So I only have one kind of underwear.
So you should be the same way... With the sock.
I'm not that way with a sock. I do sock laundry once a year. You know, when I run out of socks, I just buy more socks. So I have tons and tons and tons of socks.
Yeah, but look at them. They look homeless.
These are kind of inside socks. I've been walking around with them. They feel super nice. Like if I go like that, if they slip off, super soft.
So you remind me of the kid that never had ankle socks as a kid, so he would roll down like the shit that would go up to the shin. He would roll it down just to make sure that it fits. Look at these. Look at these socks. Tell me they're exquisitely made.
First of all, this is disgusting.
What?
I have this brand. I have the one with the this.
What's the this?
It's Polo. The Polo. I have this brand.
Why don't you wear them then? Why don't you be a
big
boy?
I do sometimes.
So why don't you burn those? And
absolutely not.
So Anthony saw Fahrenheit 451.
Yes.
I watched Fahrenheit 451.
Mike has not seen it.
So give us a little chill shot, would you?
God, where to begin? I felt like it had some parts that were redeeming, but they made a lot of changes to the source material that were just stupid. I feel like it got better toward the end.
What are the major changes that they made?
Major character changes. So like in the book, Montag has a wife who's a major character who doesn't exist in the movie. Clarice is like a teenager who's only in the first third of the book. And then in the movie, she's an adult. She's like a love interest for Montag, for the Michael B. Jordan. And it had some interesting things to say, but a lot of it was very, very heavy-handed.
It's a heavy-handed story always, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you have the second American Civil War, and the only two books that exist are Moby Dick and the Bible. Everything else is outlawed.
Yeah, it has a very different ending.
I never read the book, but I always liked the Truffaut movie, the François Truffaut movie. A lot of people who love the book don't like the movie, but I always liked it.
I read the book in high school, and then our teacher showed us the film, and she warned us that, like, it wasn't great. I don't know if we watched the whole thing or if we just watched clips, but what was interesting about it was that I read it in an American lit course, but the film is not American.
Well, it's one of two English language films that François Truffaut made. But François Truffaut is the new wave filmmaker and critic who's sort of like at the heart of the auteur theory. So he wrote A Certain Tendency of French Cinema. So like his whole thing was like, we shouldn't adapt books.
They did some things that were interesting. Like, they accommodated for the fact that there are e-books, so they're not just burning paper books. Like, there's a scene where they're burning like hard drives that have digital books on them. And then there's this weird ass subplot about encoding literature into DNA and then having that DNA spread so that like literature can be spread through biology, which is very bizarre and ends up becoming like the crux of the whole ending, which is a strange addition. But there were just a lot of cringeworthy moments. Like the first sentence of the book, which is super famous, is it was a pleasure to burn. And then in the movie, there's a part when Michael B. Jordan is like burning the books. And then he's like, "Whoo, it was a pleasure to burn, baby." And I was just like, oh, God, that's horrible.
Because my theory on it, and I haven't read this, but my theory on it was they were going to put it out in theaters. And they're like, this isn't theater worthy.
Yeah, definitely. It's straight to video quality.
How's Michael Shannon in it?
He's as creepy as ever. He actually gives a pretty good performance. He's never not giving a speech, but he's a good actor.
Did you like that they encoded books into the bird's DNA and they thought that the bird can magically fly to Canada?
No.
Where books can live on?
I thought that was really dumb. And I also feel like it was a huge missed opportunity because they have so many literary references in this movie. And then everything hinges on this bird that's been kept in a cage. And then I was like, oh, they're clearly going to release the bird. And then you're going to hear like somebody reading, "I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings." And then that never happened. But then they did show, if you looked really closely, and I freeze framed it to be sure, in one of the scenes where they're burning the books, they're burning a copy of Fahrenheit 451. If you freeze it, you could see it.
Wow. Super edgy. Super cool.
You know what, God? I'm looking at the Rotten Tomato right now, and the film holds an approval rating of 35% based on 66 reviews.
And that's all Michael Shannon's cousins.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't like Michael's new movie.
So what did you think of the end that once Montag releases the bird, Captain Betty flips out and in a fit of rage lights Montag on fire?
I thought it was interesting because to my knowledge, it's one of the only adaptations I can think of where they actually change the ending of the book to make it more bleak. Like, usually they do the opposite. Like, the book has a pretty bleak ending, and the movie, they go for a happier ending. But at the end of the book, he turns the gun on Beatty and kills Beatty and then escapes. But then in this, Beatty survives and Beatty kills him.
Yeah, but then at the end, you see the other bird.
You see the bird fly away. That weird ass, like, literature encoded in DNA thing is going to happen.
So all
which
the
I
birds,
guess means that they're going to be able to then extract the DNA from the animals.
Yeah.
And then inject themselves with it. And then they'll all have the knowledge from the literature. I don't know. It got really weird and abstract.
And that's how we get the Star Wars film where they come in with the Force.
That is true.
Because it's all about the DNA.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The one thing that I did like is that they went beyond just novels. So they weren't just burning literature. Like, there's a part where Guy Montag is looking at like an old Blockbuster video. And there are like paintings being burned too. So it's just like
anything with art, because
yeah,
they said that art would make you depressed,
right,
and it would make you unhappy.
Right.
It would create like a maddening.
Yeah, so it's not just literature. I thought that was a cool update. What did you think of like the heavy-handedness of the eels, which is something that's new to the movie? That's not in the book.
Wasn't in the book. No, I was like, what are they just making shit up on the fly?
Yeah,
what are
Mike,
doing?
The people who hoard the literature are marked, and they are eels, which is short for illegals. and the illegals are slimy and snaky and sneaky, like eels. And I just felt that it was very...
On the nose.
It was very on the nose.
Well, that's something else I was thinking about that I wanted to ask you, which is, other than the eels, are there any, like, wink, wink, we're talking about Trump?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because there's a scene in the movie where the president of the United States of America comes out and says, listen, we're going to start a space force.
That actually happened in real life. The real president went on real TV and said, I want a new branch of the military, a space force.
Listen, I'm for it.
Is it like Starfleet?
We're getting a Voltron.
No, I'll join up.
Right?
I'm probably too old for Space Force.
Maybe it's a Power Rangers SPD?
When I heard Space Force, I thought that sounds like a Power Rangers spinoff.
That's what I'm saying. Power Rangers Space Force?
Imagine Trump as the Zordon. Give me some teens with attitude. Listen, you imbeciles. Rita Repulsa is attacking the Krispy Kreme.
You never see Zordon? He only tweets you?
Yeah. Just all day long. It's like, dun, 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 dun. Oh, he's tweeting me again.
These Zords, they're fantastic. They're huge.
They're huge. These are the most luxurious Zords you've ever seen. Angel Grove is a luxurious city.
I was just thinking of like the Megazord with just like the Trump T on its chest.
We've got the best Zords. I met Rita Repulsa. Her people love her. I wish my people loved me the way her people loved her. When Rita walks into a room, Goldar stands right up.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
All right.
I saw Ocean's 8 with Anthony, and I like Ocean's 11. I did not like Ocean's 12, which is bad. And I did like Ocean's 13, and when I saw Ocean's 8, I liked it. I was like, it's good, but the more I thought about it, the more I felt like something was missing. It wasn't a poorly made movie. It lacked fun.
Anything Sandra Bullock is in lacks fun.
Obviously, you have not seen The Heat. Because she's great in that. She was not funny in this. It felt like it was trying to be too cool, which is kind of a problem with the original ones too, but they pull it off. The director of this movie was basically doing an impression of Steven Soderbergh. It's beyond homage. It's like, I'm just going to steal shots. And I mean, yeah. I guess to make it like a series, but honestly, I don't think it should have been a sequel. It should have been a reboot because they make her the sister of Danny Ocean. She's Debbie Ocean, and it's like it reminded me of Grease 2.
I think I liked it more than you did, although I agree that it needed to be funnier. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the most sequel-y moment was when she randomly had a picture of George Clooney in her bathroom, which was clearly like a still from Ocean's 11.
Right, right. It was like him from fucking... Yeah. It's like something from fucking Variety.
Yeah, and then Awkwafina's like, oh, is that your brother? And it's like, what was weird to me is like, and I just recently rewatched the Ocean's trilogy in anticipation of Ocean's 8. He's such a character, a central like character in this film, even though he's supposedly dead and he doesn't actually appear. But then if you watch the Ocean's trilogy, it's like he doesn't ever mention having a sister.
No, because he didn't have a fucking sister.
But everything she does is like for her brother.
Right, because there's this whole thing in this movie where it's like, oh, our whole family was criminals.
Right.
Which is corny. In its attempt to sequelize it and make it part of that other trilogy, I felt like a lot of it's very corny.
I agree. A lot of that was corny, and I wish they had done less of it.
There were two cameos from original members. You had Yen, and you had
Elliot Gould.
I think Yen would have been perfect. The Elliot Gould one, I don't think we needed because it also establishes like Elliot Gould knows her and they all know each other.
And then Matt Damon was either supposed to be in it or was in it and was cut.
I think he shot one scene and was cut. But that would have been even worse. I think you needed less. It needed less of a connection to the original one, I think.
It would have been cool if like Julie Roberts showed up and she was like, what up?
One of the things that's missing from it is it lacked a good villain.
Who was the villain? I guess Anne Hathaway was the villain, but she's one of them.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert for that. Sorry. Anne Hathaway, she's kind of the villain, but she's also kind of the mark. So it's like she's not like a bad guy the way...
She's supposed to be like an unlikable character.
Right, but she's likable. Whereas Andy Garcia's character he sort of senses, he smells that something's happening, but they're one step ahead of him. He's a villain where there's no villain.
Yeah,
in this.
There are no stakes in this one. Like, you get the sense from the first 5 minutes, like, oh, they're gonna pull this off and it's gonna be fine.
Right, nothing bad's gonna happen.
Yeah, there's no real threat.
Yeah, yeah.
To the job.
Because the second one took place in Europe.
Yeah.
And I wonder, and the first and the third took place in Vegas, and this new one takes place in New York. And I wondered if the sort of ring-a-ding-ding style that Soderbergh used in the cinematography and the music, if it only works in Vegas.
Well, yeah, Vegas is flashy and it's like tacky.
Right, because in this they go to the Met and they steal jewelry from the Met Gala, and it's like the Met is so erudite. It's not Vegas.
Right. What did you think of that scene where Sandra Bullock says, we can pull this off because people don't notice us? It's the one time where, like, women can go unnoticed. So I read something or heard something where somebody said, yeah, that's a great argument if it weren't the Met Gala where literally everybody's looking at what the women are wearing all night long.
Right, right. I liked more the scene where she was, like, getting dressed up. And she says something like, somewhere there's a young girl who wants to grow up and become a criminal, and she needs a hero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Too many of the funny lines went to James Corden.
Which is not good because he's not funny. Also, the movie
ends.
I've
been told I look like that man many times.
No, not really.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, James Corden also is not necessary because the movie sort of ends and then Gordon comes in as like an investigator. Yeah, yeah. Again, there's no stakes. It doesn't do anything. He sort of is an investigator, and then Sandra Bullock is like, hey, I basically did it and you caught me, but why don't I make a deal with you? And
I was wondering, too, if this is supposed to kick off a new trilogy where there's going to be like an 8, 9, 10, and then an 11, 12, 13.
I think that's why they picked. I think that's why they said 8.
But then it wouldn't be – it's not like episode 1 where you'd watch them in number order.
No, but so, it would be 11, 12, 13, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah. I felt Mindy Kaling was really underused. I thought that Sarah Paulson didn't get any good stuff to do.
Yeah, Awkwafina.
Rihanna was really good.
But she also had that hacker role of her just standing in front of a computer going, you got to make a left. You know what I mean? That whole thing. It wasn't terrible. If I had to give it a rating, I'd give it a B.
I'd give it an Ocean's 8.
Clearly I was doing a letter. I was doing a letter scale.
Well, it was a missed opportunity.
Is that an 8 out of...
That's an 8 out of...
100?
No. I give it an 8 out of... I give it an 80 out of 100. I was anticipating this movie because I wanted it to be like funny women.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's the way I feel almost about Ghostbusters where it's like, I wish it was better because some people are going to blame the fact that it's not great on the women when it's just not great because it's not great. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I wanted this to be something awesome.
Was this a female director or a male director?
I believe it was a male director.
Let's think on that.
Emilio, have you been watching or reading anything lately?
You know what I'm reading.
You still reading A Sandman?
I just started the second volume called The Dollhouse.
And how's it going?
It's very heady.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dialogue, but now they're moving from that he has reclaimed his stuff, he has reclaimed his land, and now he is starting to bring order back to the dream world.
Sounds exciting.
They're leading up to his battle with the Corinthian, which is one of the three dreams that went rogue, and this guy is a serial killer, and he's going to probably meet up and battle him at the Serial Convention, which is a convention in Georgia that is just for serial killers. And I'm losing Anthony right now. I'm reading a comic book called The Sandman. It's Neil Gaiman. It's a lot.
And you're only in volume 2. It's only going to get crazier.
Has this ever been adapted to film?
It's been in production hell.
Starring Andrew Dice Clay.
I'm the king of the dreams, baby! Are you ready for it? It's not sand! Oh!
Take a break.
And we're back. Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. You can subscribe to us anywhere the podcasts are available. That's at your Stitcher. That's at your Apple Music. That's at your Google Play. And, of course, you can't forget Spotify. If you want to send Sandman spoilers to Emilio Sparks, it's at Emilio Sparks on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we're on Instagram as Pop Culture Man Children, spelled just like that.
Yeah.
Pop Culture Man Children. So, it's time for obsessions.
Obsessions.
My current obsession is a show that actually came out a couple of years ago. It's like 2 years old. It's a British show that is on Amazon, and it's called Fleabag. It stars this really funny British actress who's also the director of the show and the writer of the show, and it's based on a one-woman show that she did. And her name is Phoebe Waller-Bridge. You might know her as L7 from Solo. She's the voice of L7.
Oh, I love that voice.
It's a little bit like the British show Chewing Gum, but more like upper class, more like rich people. We find out at the end of the pilot that her best friend committed suicide, and she is sort of a sex addict, and she's got a bad relationship with her father and kind of a strained relationship with her sister. I'm making it sound serious, but actually it's really, really funny. It's kind of, in some ways, the best representation I may have ever seen of mourning. Because when you really go through mourning, it's not just, you know, you're sad for a little while. It's something you carry with you. So through every episode, no matter what she's doing or what's going on, like, you'll see, like, little, like, flashes, like, flashbacks that are in her head of, like, her best friend who's gone. And, like, someone will be talking to her and a reminder of something her best friend did. I think it's a really true representation of what mourning's actually like. I think mourning is like something inside your body. You know what I mean? I mean, yes, there's the crying and the whatever, but then mourning is a long process that you sort of carry with you. And it's a very funny show, and it's a very frank show, and it does that British comedy tradition where Phoebe Waller-Bridge is constantly narrating and talking to the camera, but like she does it in a way where even in the middle of like a dialogue scene, she'll just look at the camera. Like she'll be talking to somebody, and then she'll look at the camera, and be like, "Wait for this." And, like
she'll break the fourth wall.
She breaks the fourth wall like constantly. Like there's even a scene where you see like a flashback that looks like it's going to be something serious, and then she looks at the camera, and goes, "Not yet, not yet." And then you don't get to it till the next episode.
I like that.
So it's really funny, really beautifully made. Of course, it's only 6 episodes because it's British. I don't know if there's going to be more. The only American in it is Brett Gelman, playing his typical creepy-ass character. But it's really good. That's my current obsession.
That is a very good obsession.
Thank you. What about you?
All right, it's not a television show. It is not a comic book. It's an Instagram page.
Whose Instagram?
It is just a random Instagram page of people living in vans.
Oh, okay.
Did you?
Tell me about it. I meant to tell you, there's a documentary
about
on Amazon called Vanning. About this lifestyle you want to lead.
I just want to live off the land. I want to shit in a bucket, like the whole nine.
So you want to go like the into the wild route?
No, well, I don't want to romanticize, you know, what
dying
Alexander,
from poison.
Yeah, I don't like what Alexander Supertramp was doing, as he liked to refer to himself as, and I don't want to have a really weird connection with Vince Vaughn over a leather belt.
Yes, neither do I.
I'm not a big camper. I'm not one with nature.
But you sleep in the van?
But yeah, I would sleep in the van.
Kind of van do these people have?
Volkswagens or just...
Are they like crappy little vans?
Nah, they're like these vans that like they... First off, most of these people have money.
So it's like an RV thing, but
yes,
it's a van.
Yes, it's very fancy. It is extremely fancy vans. Hold on, let me see if I can find...
Are these people freegans? Do they eat garbage?
See, I would not do that.
It sounds like it's a sort of hippie thing.
Freegans, are those the same as urban foragers or foresters or whatever they're called?
Yeah, if you're an urban forager, you are a freegan because you're only eating food that you look for.
I heard that Shailene Woodley is one. Is that true?
I've heard that she is. I also heard she makes her own soap.
I'm not a hunter
she eats it,
or
sure.
A gatherer.
What about this van lifestyle appeals to you?
Peace? Where you could just pick up and go and be left the fuck alone.
Where would you take your van?
Oh, God, everywhere. I would like to...
Well, let's say you got a van now. What direction do you start in?
Oh, man. No, what I'm doing is I'm rolling a pair of dice, right? And if it lands on 12, that's as many times as I have to fill my gas tank, and then I stay there the last time I can't fill the gas tank.
And that's just where your van is?
I stay for a little while, make enough money, live... get back in the
like
van,
a samurai.
Roll the dice, and go off on the other world. It's Van Life Turkey is the Instagram that I follow.
Van Life Turkey.
With two Y's at the end. Now, and they basically just remodel these. Like, look how nice these are. Look, there's like wood flooring and
no,
like,
that looks beautiful.
Is that a trailer? Oh, yeah, that is a wow, look at that dog.
There's a dog in that
van. He looks so happy.
I want to know why your heart desires this, though.
That's a beautiful, that look kind of looks like the Who's the Boss van.
Could you imagine us doing the podcast on the road? We're living in a van.
Like Jack Kerouac on the road recording your podcast, PCMC on the go.
Exactly. Me and your brother could be Sal Paradise and Dean Moriarty. Two guys living on the road, becoming even closer as friends. Mike shit in a bucket.
I don't think Mike could up and leave all these toys.
But here's the thing. Maybe we live in the van, we go across the country, or maybe a couple of states, and we just hit up some random toy spots
you
for Mike
should.
To go search for his plastic gods.
That sounds like a great Netflix series.
See?
You should go cross country in a van and see how many Toys R Us, flailing Toys R Uses you can hit up.
Well, we'd have to go right now because Toys R Us closes in 7 days.
Like,
from
look at
recording this.
Look how amazing this life
is. I feel like this is a one person thing.
There's a whole family.
I feel like, but if you, like, for what you're trying to do for the, like, spiritual journey you want to go on, I feel like you've got to be, like, the Incredible Hulk. You've got to blow into town, solve a crime.
I'm looking at this right now, and I don't judge, but this is a young family living in a van, and I'm just wondering, like, what kind of life does this young child have? Does he even have a stable school? I mean, children need structure.
Well, I actually believe that it's just a vacation thing. I don't think these people are living there constantly.
That's one thing.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm a single man ready to travel the world in my cool bitchin' van.
There will be some oceans that get in your way.
Which is fine. I would love to have beachfront property like Martin Riggs in Lethal Weapon.
Now, is that full with the every night you drink yourself into a stupor and almost blow your brains out?
1,000%.
Well, you know what's not cool? Always having your phone on night mode. It makes everything golden. Emilio's phone is always on nighttime mode.
Because I like a golden shimmer on everything. It's the constant sunset over an ocean, just gold cascading.
Chasing Sunset is the name of the memoir you're going to write after this experience.
See, your brother gets me.
You
probably
get
me. You get because I don't think you would, you know.
No,
like
I would invite
Anthony. I would invite Anthony with me. I'd be like,
I'd go on a trip, but
I'm
not going.
Come take a weekend with me. Come live in my van for a weekend. Let's go do stuff. Let's go fishing. I don't know. Let's do something. I've never fished a day in my life, but
I'd go on a trip. I don't want to.
So let's get in.
I don't want to up and leave my life.
We don't have to. But I'm just saying, you're a teacher.
I gotta teach.
Not all summer.
Okay.
Can you imagine this podcast on the road?
If you buy a van, I'll go with you.
I might want to buy a van. It has to look like this, though. It needs comfortable bedding.
Well, you gotta be able to live in it. Is that, serious question, is that illegal?
To live in a van like that?
It's gotta be illegal, right? Because there are all sort of housing laws and stuff.
No, you gotta go where you're in one of those camps.
Yeah, but that's for trailers.
Yeah, but that's what we would do. We wouldn't be living in the thing constantly.
But I don't know if...
You know where you park when you come to my house?
Yeah.
There was people living in a van.
Oh, there are van livers, for sure.
And my next door neighbors had enough. Because every time they'd come out, they would see human shit and needles. I'd never seen the cops come more.
But you were looking at them like, that's the life.
I was looking at this couple like, they fucking get it. They are free. Yeah. They don't have to worry about taxes and cell phones and a job. They just get it. I don't know what they're doing, but they're living. Like, me personally, I wouldn't live in Staten Island with the van. I'd probably live in, like, San Diego or Marina Del Rey, like, somewhere pretty and nice where there was, like, a nice ocean or whatever. I would do that.
I just imagine you looking out the window at the crackheads that are being taken away from the cops and your eyes gleaming and all you hear is, and they're not going to catch me, no. And they're not going to catch the Midnight Rider.
I'm telling you, man. I would feel free.
Anthony, do you have any obsessions?
It's a book. It's this book I'm reading. It's called Word by Word, The Secret Life of Dictionaries. Talk about a niche market.
What a nerd.
But it's written by this woman, Corey Stamper, who is an editor for Merriam-Webster. But it's like part
informative, part memoir, and it's about like the life of someone who is an editor for the dictionary and is a lexicographer. And I just
that
find
sounds
it
fascinating.
So fascinating.
A lexicographer.
Yeah, because basically all she does, as she describes, like all she and her colleagues do all day long is just obsess over
words
and the nuances of all the definitions of words.
What's the best thing you've taken out of this?
Oh boy. Put me on the spot.
You know, I read, while you're thinking of that, I could tell you, I read something recently about reading and about remembering what you read because I never remember what I read.
Yeah, me
and
neither.
And apparently, we're not unique. Nobody remembers what they read.
Yeah.
You basically will take one or two things out of every book you read unless you read it again within 48 hours. You've got a 48-hour window before it flushes out of your brain.
I'll tell you what I took away from it, which is something that, as an English teacher, is especially of interest to me, is she has this whole... It's basically broken down into like essays because it is really a memoir. She has this whole essay on grammar, on English grammar. And it's all about how she, as a lexicographer, as well as many other like grammarians and linguists, don't actually follow these established rules of grammar. They're not really rules that we need to follow. Like, there's two schools of thought when it comes to grammar. One is prescriptivism, which is like you prescribe the grammar and you tell the student or the person or whomever, like, what is the right or wrong, so to speak,
right
way to speak English.
Right.
And then there's the other, which I guess, I think it's called transformative grammar, or maybe I have that wrong, or something, where you understand that grammar follows language. Language doesn't follow grammar. So, yes, it's a word. If enough people say it, it's a word.
Right.
In this chapter, talks about how she gets, like, hate mail from these really, like, uptight prescriptivists who are like, I can't believe that you put ginormous in the dictionary. That's not a word. And the response is always like, well, the dictionary's job is to capture the words that are in use. And language is living and evolving always.
Right. People say
and there
it.
Is no one English. There are thousands upon thousands of different dialects of English.
Right.
So if people are saying it and it has a meaning, then it is a word and it should be in the dictionary. So that's interesting because... Again, as an English teacher and somebody who, like...
I'm a professor.
I know you're a professor. I was an English major, and, like, I hang out with, like, people who are into the written word. There are a lot of hang-ups about, like, proper grammar.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really bought into that stuff, and I don't really buy into it. I'm more into the study of the way people speak and write. I mean, there is standard written English, and I do instruct my students... like what is acceptable in standard written English. But I always try to go out of my way to say, like, this doesn't mean that you're speaking bad English because I speak bad English too then. But this is just what the standard is right now.
Yeah.
And these are the rules that you should follow for writing, but not necessarily speaking. Like, I just think it's really dickish when people correct other people's grammar.
When people are uptight about that and correct other people's grammar, it ends up being very elitist.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's really nerdy and it's
not
like a pop culture thing, but that's I'm really into
words
that.
Are pop culture.
That's absolutely true. They are.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm into. The book is really good.
Guys, I think we did it. I'm excited about this van life.
You're coming with me,
Pat. I'm excited about these words. You ready to go bye-bye?
Can we please?
Let's go bye-bye.
All right. Go bye-bye.